in review, we are in our, this is the fourth part of our eight-part series, Christian Exion. And we've been talking about this series about the most famous brand in all of history. You go anywhere you go in the world, you can say Christian, and somebody will, they'll have an idea what that is. But if you're just coming in, we've learned that Jesus never actually called his followers Christians. The word Christian didn't even come around until Jesus did what he did, and he's gone, right? And it's only used three times in the whole Bible. Check it yourself. Go blow off that dusty Bible of yours, open it up, re-download that Bible app like a good little Christian, and get in there and look at it and find out and search. Do a Google search. How many times is Christian in the Bible? Three times. And when it was spoken, it was actually derogatory. It was meant as little Christ follower because they were actually intimidated by Christians at that time. These followers of Christ because of how effective they were. They were literally changing the landscape of Rome and the lands around. And so he actually gave a different label, a better label to his followers. He called them disciples. And that's actually a terrifying label because Christian is loosely defined. You know, you could have some, you know, something that connects you to the Bible in some little way. And you go, oh, I'm Christian because, you know, of this. But disciple, it is very well defined in Scripture. Jesus spoke on it a lot. So when it comes to Christian, I can't necessarily say somebody's not a Christian, but I can say they're not a disciple based on the definition of what we find in the Bible. So that is a terrifying label, one that you have to live up to. And truth is, not everybody's up for it. But if you believe in Jesus, you've met someone who has been up to the challenge of disciple. If we would have stuck to the original label, if we would have stuck to what Jesus said to be as a Christ follower, things would be totally different. The first century followers did, and they changed the world. They did some really cool stuff, and because of that, just only 300 years later, this is what happened in Rome. Got a couple pictures for you. Now, if you notice this picture, notice the top of the buildings. There's crosses. Crosses at the top. All right, next picture. This is very familiar. I'm sure you've seen it in movies. This is where the Pope does his thing, does his big talks, okay? Look at all. I mean, you got angelic figures. You've got crosses at the very center right there. Go to the next picture. Got more crosses on top of the building. Look at the beautiful landscapes. Next one. Another cross. Keep going. These are all kind of cathedrals. You've got just famous, beautiful artwork, all centered around Jesus. Continue on. More crosses everywhere, all over the place. There's another one. That's beautiful. This is just, a lot of this stuff was created just like around 300 years later. This came the norm. But in the time of the first century followers, now let's put yourself in their shoes, okay? So Jesus just did his thing. Right? It's spreading like wildfire. The disciples are going out and they're talking about Jesus and people are, they're converting, they're becoming believers, they're changing their whole ways. Their ways were so different to the point where they're being hunted. That Nero now has pegged them as a scapegoat for him to burning Rome down so he could start over. Now they're hunting down these Christ followers because he's blaming them for it. They're hiding in the shadows. They're cowering in their homes. They're fleeing for their lives. The Nero soldiers are literally dragging them out of their hiding places in the streets, arresting them. They're taking them to something called Nero's Circus. It was not a circus you want to go to, okay? Nero's Circus was actually, they would take them to an arena, and then they would literally be attacked by animals, and people would be gawking and looking onto this. They were being hung. They were being crucified. They were being all sorts of things. They were being put on stakes. They were hunted just in total terror. All right, now let's say you could time travel, and you find a family, Christ followers, and they're hiding, you know, in their home, and you go up to them and say, hey, did you know that, like, 300 years from now, like, Jesus, like, the symbol of the cross is going to be for Jesus, and it's going to be on top of the buildings, and the church is actually going to be in charge. Like, there's going to be important, they're going to be submitting to what Jesus said. Would they believe that? They'd be like, no way. There's no way that is true because we are being hunted. There is no way that Christ followers could have such power, could have such influence when they are seeing just destruction and they're literally being killed off daily. And not just in secret ways, but horrific ways. There's nobody standing for their justice. There is nobody fighting for them because Nero is in control. If you would have went to them and just said, in less than 300 years, just in a few generations, their grandchildren probably would have been the first ones to see it. The church is going to be, it's going to be exalted. There's going to be buildings created with crosses on top. There's going to be artwork of Jesus, the one that they are hating and they're hunting you for because of. They're going to make artwork about him. They're going to celebrate him. There is no way they would have believed it. I wouldn't have believed it if I would have been in that time and or facing the same thing. But they did. They changed. Something happened. It totally changed the landscape politically, relationally, culturally, all over Rome and spread out from there. How did this happen? So fast forward to this day and age. Something that was that powerful, how could it be in decline now? Something that could have changed the landscape of everything in just 300 years, how is it now that it's in decline? How are we facing this now? And the truth is because we've settled for just being Christian. We've settled for just being an identity. We're arguing over things like keeping one nation under God and the Pledge of Allegiance. We're arguing over stuff like that, fighting for that. We're arguing for keeping the Ten Commandments in courthouses, which is not a bad thing. That's not an evil thing. It's a noble thing. But the problem is that we've settled with making God or Jesus a monument instead of a movement. We're making Jesus a monument instead of a movement. That's totally different. A monument, you make and it stays. And you walk by it and you pay it homage and you keep going about your life. But a movement is active. It's living. It's constantly happening. It's in your life. It's going with you. What if we would have stuck with Jesus, what Jesus began with, that movement? It was such a movement that it was defined in that way. Before they were labeled as Christians, or it was even called church, it was translated over and over again, it was called the way. Like, that way, this way, the way. It was the only way. What a better definition for a movement than that. It's like this way. When you want to get someone to make a move somewhere, you say, it's this way. The way. It was, it is a movement. All right, before we jump in, guys, disclaimer. Okay, here's my disclaimer for today. I have to give those a lot. Here's my disclaimer. If you are not a Christian, if you do not ascribe to being a Christian, if you're here and you're just kind of wondering, if you're on the fence about it, you do not have to follow any of this. You get a pass, all right? Some of you are like, ooh, I kind of like that. You get a pass. If you're listening to this online and you're wondering, you get a pass here, but if you say that you are a Christian, you are a Christ follower, you're a disciple, this is you. You subscribe to this, and you adhere to this. All right, let's continue. Matthew 5, 1 through 13, we're going to be looking at. This is the famous Sermon on the Mount, and it's as it literally sounds. To them, it was probably more like a hill. I don't know, but it was a landscape where it was elevated, and he goes, and he speaks this whole amazing sermon, the Beatitudes. It's just amazing, awesome stuff. Totally just great for the time, great for our time. And this is kind of what he says. This is what he starts off with. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain. And when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying. All right, so everything before this, you can imagine, is like, everything that, you know, people have met Jesus, and like everything he says is so weak. It's all about love. It's, you know, it's squishy and ishy, and you know, it's so soft. How could he, you know, he's passive kind of, you know, he could be defined as that. There's no way to start a movement. In this time, this is the way that they thought. That's no way to convince anybody of anything. Clearly, he didn't understand how to get stuff done. I beg to differ from the pictures that you see. But how did this happen? And then he continues on. He says, okay, here we go. Blessed are the poor. What? The poor? Blessed are the poor in spirit, for their kingdoms, for there is the kingdom of heaven. Poor. That's one of the first things. Okay, poor. Moving on. Blessed are those who mourn. Wait a minute. Mourn? That can't be right. For they shall be comforted. Okay, great. You know, this is like as they're listening to this. You can imagine kind of being in their shoes. Blessed are the meek. Wait, the meek? Hold on. The subtle, the humble, the considerate, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Wait, not selfishness? Wait, shouldn't they be after their own? For they shall be satisfied, meaning with righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Shouldn't it be the powerful? Shouldn't it be the controlling? Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers. The peacemakers? For they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted. Hold on. Blessed are those who are persecuted? That doesn't sound like a blessing to me. Blessed are for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those when others revile. Revile? Blessed are those when you're reviled. You revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. He must be on something today. This Jesus, I don't know what he's talking about. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So wait a minute. So these people are listening to Jesus, and they're like, okay, this guy is on the move. I'm following this guy. He's clearly changing the landscape. I'm all about it. What? How are we going to do this, Jesus? He's going up in the mountain, you know, and he's talking, you know, and he's like, sure, he's going to lay out this game plan. He's going to give us some swords. We're going to go take over, right? We're going to take over this thing. Hold on, we're supposed to be poor, sad, meek, righteous, merciful, pure, peaceful, persecuted, insulted people waiting for a reward from heaven. What? There has been no kingdom that has been overtaken through that. None of those words, those are the losers. The ones that lose, those are the descriptors for them. Some of you are like, man, I'd rather be just Christian. Can I just be Christian? Do I have to be a disciple? That doesn't sound like winning. And they're thinking, they're looking at Jesus like, I would be. Like, what are you saying to us, man? How is this going to work? Are you reading from the wrong notes? We're supposed to be the winning. That's not how you win. And then he continues on, and this really probably flipped them on their head. He says, you are the salt of the earth. They're like, wait a minute, I thought we were Christians. Hold on, now we're salt? What does that even mean? Imagine you're hearing this for the first time. It's like, hey guys, you are the paprika of life, you know, or you are the seasonal, or somebody be like, I'm the Tony Sacheries of this world, you know. You would love that. That's kind of the same thing. He's like, you are the salt. You are the salt of the earth. You see, we use salt now for seasoning and stuff like that, but in that time, some of you know, historically, salt was used as a preservative. And just so I don't mess up what it is, the definition of preservative, a substance added to food to prevent decomposition, I sounded that really well, decomposition, due to the chemical change or bacterial action. Salt is a preservative. And so what he is telling you, the Christ followers, the disciples, those people listening to him who are going to change the landscape, that they are preservatives of the earth. They are to preserve the earth and everything on it. They are society preservers, the ingredient that keeps the whole world from rotting faster than it was. It was rotting fast. And we know that because it was rotting because might made right, meaning that whoever was the strongest was the right one. The rich ruled the poor, not mercifully. The right or that you were right or wrong, and it was determined by who was in power, not by moral, not by that's not fair, that's not just. Whoever was in power could decide what was right and wrong. The earth was rotting. People were rotting. Compassion was a sign of weakness, still is today in some areas. It was a world where a king could slaughter children to protect his throne. Yes, very true. To protect their power, they could kill children off. And that was okay. The king had the power just to murder when they see fit because it benefited their lineage or what their history, whatever they were doing. That is a world in decay. That is a world that is decomposing. And he comes along and says, you are the preservative of this earth. See, at the heart of Judaism and the teaching of Christ is a worldview that's normal to us, right? Okay, so, but it didn't exist in this time. It didn't exist outside of Palestine and does not exist in many parts of the world today. So basically the idea, and a lot of people would agree with this, if you just kind of walk around and talk, you know, to people, that there's one God. Okay, it's on our money and things like that, and in the Constitution and stuff. There's one God, that all men and women are created in the image of God and are valued and such, right? We would all agree with that. Women are not inferior to men. Not a lot agree with that, but they should, because this is the truth. Dignity does go beyond one's political power or social capital. The strong are to be defending the weak. That's something that we believe. The rich are to be generous to the poor. We also believe that. This was uncommon in this time. Forgiveness, not revenge, must govern relationships. The marriage covenant is sacred. A lot of parts of the world don't see that. All we give an account for the ways that we live, we have to give an account for our lives. All that we do, we have to give an account. Now, this is a basic belief. Like you go travel around America, you travel, you know, a lot of parts of the world, they would believe this. They would agree with this. But at this time, this was only believed in probably the area of Palestine. This was the norm there. So imagine a world that is void of all of that, all that I just said. That men and women aren't created equal in the image of God. That women should have rights. That kids, in this time, women didn't have rights, nor kids had less rights than women, okay? And if you didn't have money, you had even less rights. You almost didn't deserve to live. They could take your life if they wanted to. Imagine a world like that. We think it's common sense. We're like, people are just built with a moral code in them. You know, they know right, you know, right from wrong. We think that, but we're kind of taking not in the context of what life and what humans are. Humans are selfish. We think it's common decency to act that way, but it's not. This is leftover ethics from Judeo and Christian ethic. This is something that has influenced our culture. Because of what they did in that 300 years, the change in the landscape of Rome from a ruler that was literally hunting them down and killing them as sport, now the one that represented them is being celebrated. That is what the leftovers have come from. That lifestyle, that power. And look outside our Western culture. This is not the norm, guys. If you just turn on the news and hear about the things that are going on, the people that are against America or against, you know, other people who are free and respect one another, they have slavery, they have honor killings, they have human trafficking, they have mass murder, and this is normal life to them. This is what it looks like to be void of these teachings, void of that Judeo-Christian ethic. So even though you feel like you have no standing, like those Christians, those disciples that were hiding, they felt like they had no standing. In the first century, when they were being hunted, they were having to like hide in the shadows. They didn't feel like they had any power. They didn't feel like you couldn't have convinced them that the world was going to change in such a way. But even when they felt they had no standing, they were the last stand. They are the last stand. They have been, and they've obviously did what they were supposed to do. They literally changed Rome. Your presence makes a difference. Your presence makes a difference. Salt always makes a difference. You ever been a cook? You ever cook something and you realize, I put too much salt in? Because salt makes a difference, okay? You could like, man, if you don't get it just right, it's either not enough or it's too much, you know? Salt makes a huge difference. So there's a reason why he uses that. It preserves. It preserves. It is a powerful, powerful thing. But there's something else. He didn't stop there. There's something else. In Matthew 5, 14 through 16, we're going to review this. It says, the next thing it says, you are the light of the world. I said, hold on, man. We were salt first. Okay, now we're the salt of the earth. Now we're the light of the world. What is this? I'm a human. I'm not a light bulb. I'm not a fire. You know, how do I do this? And they're thinking again, can I just be Christian and die and go to heaven? Is that even possible? Do I have to be light? That seems very exposed, okay? I feel like people are going to be looking at me. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Now let's break this down right here. A city set on a hill. We skip past this a lot. It sounds easy. It's an easy sentence to read, but a city set on a hill. Okay, so set in kind of more of the deeper meaning, what it was meaning when the original, when it was originally said, was set was a intentional thing. It was an intentionality, a pointed or a destined by divine. That means a lot more than just you set something down. That means a lot of thought went into this. A lot of effort went into this. And in this time, the lands are kind of flat, you know, ish. And when they would build a city, it would make it out of limestone, like a white limestone. And so when he's talking about, this is the image that they're seeing in their head, like a city set on a hill. Now, when you are far different distance from a city in that time, you could see the sun glistening off this white limestone. You could not miss the cities from a long distance. You could see them. They were shining at you because of what they were made of. In the same way, he's saying it's purposeful. This city is not set here by accident. They didn't go to a deep ravine and throw it in there and hope that people find it. No, they put it at a high point, and not just at a high point, they built it with a substance that was reflective, that even when the moon was hitting it, you could see it from a distance. There was no losing it. There was no hiding from it. The implication of this is that you are like a strategically placed city. You, disciples, Christ followers, you are like a strategically placed city. You have been positioned strategically. It feels random. Your life feels random. I'm here for random reasons. I don't know how I ended up here, but God knows. Jesus has placed you there specifically for a reason. It is no more random. Jesus is saying you are no more random than a well-placed city. That makes a big difference, right? That really changes things. All right, we're moving on. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket. So why did he say this? So the put in that, put, it's kind of more of a meaning of no significance. No one lights it. It would defeat the purpose if you just put it under a basket and hid it. You are not just meant to mix in. This is what he's telling you, Christ followers, disciples. He's telling you, you are not just meant to mix in. He has not put a light inside of you. He has not made you where people can see just so you can hide. Just so you can hide on social media. Just so you can hide at your work. Just so you can hide at home. No, he is meant for you to shine and to be shown off. You're not just a mix-in. And then it continues, but on a stand. Not only are you lit. Actually, what did they lit? Not only are you lit. Cultural relevance. Not only are you lit. But you are purposely and strategically placed like a city on a hill. You are purposely put on a pedestal to be shown. And it gives light to all in the house. All meaning everybody. Everybody in the vicinity of you, you are meant to be seen by. You are meant to be a light to everybody. Not just who you pick. Not just who you decide that you want to minister to or share the gospel with. You are meant to be a light that every person, if they can lay eyes on you, you are meant to shine for them. All right? That changes things, right? That changes perspective. Continue on. In the same way, meaning as a city set on a hill and a lamp in a house. Let your light on. Okay, now he said your. He didn't say your pastors or that person on TBN or, you know, anybody like that. He said your, meaning you individually, Christ followers, light. Let your light shine before others. Don't hide it. Put it out there. Let it shine before others so they may see your good works. Might see, for they could see your good works. Not the good works of others, your good works. That means I can't just go around saying, hey, Jesus is real. Look what this other person did over here. No, no, no. Jesus is real because of what's happening in my life. Jesus is real because I'm compelled to love in a way that doesn't make sense. Jesus is real because of what I can put in front of you, not what I can say other people have done. Your word in your mouth means more than the words of somebody else's in your mouth. Let your light shine so that other might see your good works. And what kind of works? Unusually good works. Not just any works, unusually good works, like the kind of works that make people say, I can't believe you did that kind of good. Nobody's been that generous before, that kind of good, those kind of good works. And all that, just to bring perspective and give glory to your Father in heaven, it helps people connect the dots. Your life as a light is meant to help people connect the dots. God doesn't make sense to them. You're to help that. All your light shining, all your works, all that you are doing is meant to help people connect thoughts where they can say, man, if they can love that much, maybe there's something better. And I will point out that what our mission statement is faith compelling love, love compelling faith. It's so that they can see us working our faith in such a way that it makes us love in such a way that love shines so bright it compels them to faith. That is a game changer. So guys, don't just settle for being Christian. I'm not saying go take your bumper sticker off or anything like that or remove it off Facebook. No, 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 I'm not saying all that. Don't just settle for being Christian. Be salt. Be the preservative of this earth. Be light. Be a light that shines bright, that's set on a pedestal, that's not being hidden. That whoever sees you will see Christ. You are the salt of this earth, a preservative the world can, so the world will not rot. It changes things. It changes your perspective when you see it that way. It's not a, I'm earning my way to heaven, but I'm showing people how to get there. Right. I'm not earning. It's not a change of, I'm preserving a standard that was fought for in that first century that changed things, changed a whole city. I'm preserving that. That really changes the mindset of why you do things. It's not so that, man, I hope God isn't mad at me. No, I'm preserving a standard, and that really kind of changes even so to the point where nobody's looking. When nobody's looking at you and you're alone, and that's when sin happens kind of the most, everybody knows. Even in those times, you think to yourself, no, I'm not just trying to avoid going to hell. I'm actually preserving something here. I'm preserving a standard in life in this world. I'm trying to preserve this earth. And then be a light. You are the light. You are strategically placed to draw attention to your Father in heaven. Some of you are like, no, I'm not. I was transferred here. No, no, I'm not. My parents made me go to this school. It's not my district. I mean, I just moved here. I don't even want this job. I have no influence. I followed a guy here, and then he dumped me. You know, some of you might be in that place. You might feel that way. It's like, man, it's random. I'm here by accident. There's no way that God has purposely placed me here. If you are a follower of Christ, a follower of Jesus, it's because somebody was salt or light for you. Yeah. Think about that person who dropped in your life out of nowhere. And you kind of viewed the actions that they had. You kind of watched what they do. You feel like that person was strategically placed in your life. You ever have people in that your life like that? You feel like, man, that moment that I met them, that like they changed things for me. They moved the landscape of my life. They changed my workings, my what I thought my city was, what I thought I was doing here, what I was meant for. They changed it. I guarantee you, if you went up to that person and says, man, did God tell you to be here for this time, this moment? And they're like, this is random. I don't know. They'll say, I don't feel like I'm supposed to be here. That's the way it works, and that's the way it always has. That regardless of where you go, that you are a light to this world. Regardless of what you are doing, regardless of what's happening, where you're supposed to work, even though you feel like you're not supposed to be there, you are meant to preserve this earth, and you're meant to be a light. They feel like you. I just happen to be here. That teacher, that friend, that coach, they were strategically placed. You think so? They don't. They don't because they're just being salt and light. They just made a decision to be salt and light. Not that God had to appear before them and tell them to go a certain way, just that wherever they went, they were salt and light. It's been always been that way. There were men and women who were so bright, you couldn't help but notice. They lit up the office, they lit up the neighborhood, the team that you were on, the fraternity that you're in, the sorority that you're in. There was just something different about them. They did things that, I mean, they challenged you, but they weren't judgmental. That's a good feeling. They challenged you, but weren't judgmental about your actions. They did the right things, even when it wasn't their benefit. That's just weird, right? Some of you were on the verge of making a terrible decision in your life, but somebody around you was salty enough. That's the only time salty is good. They were salty enough that they preserved you. They kept you from making that bad choice. They challenged you to do something better and to value yourself more. So, be salty. Be salty. Be light. Shine. And the rest will take care of itself. God will strategically place the people in your life that need to be shined on. That they will need you to be salty for them, to help preserve their life. He will do the work. So what is this? Where does this leave you guys? The disciples. So if you're a student, you are a light, you are salt in your high school, in your college, and you're thinking nobody cares or pays attention, I'm just one person. Salt always preserves, light always is seen. You are the salt and light of your company. You're like, I'm just in the real estate industry. You know, we're all sharks here. You know, you are still light. You are still salt. Even the dark, it's actually better to be in the darkest of industries because, man, you're going to shine real bright. You know, you're going to be real salty. You know, they're going to taste what you got going on and go, man, you are different. At Home Depot, at Starbucks, at Wells Fargo, at the doctor's office, in the art industry, wherever you are meant to be salt and light. You're even the salt and light in your own home. You're the salt and light, and some of you coach parents, you know, if you hear me on this, okay? You're the salt and light of your team, even your kids' team. Now, that I just ruined some people's day if they want to yell at the umpire. You know, they want to have it out with the coach after, like, why didn't you put my kid in? You are still salt and light. It doesn't turn off. That light doesn't go away. It isn't put out or under a basket. Regardless of where you are, Jesus is telling you, you are a disciple. You are showing off. You are showing up. Your presence alone can change the landscape of a city. You are purposeful. You are strategic. The people in your life are meant to be there to see you so that you can help preserve them. Preserve a standard of living, a moral standard of living, and then you can shine light for them to show them Jesus everywhere you go. You might not feel like it, but God has destined you for where you are right now. You might hate the place you're in, but God has destined you to be there, to be the light needed, to be the salt needed to preserve. So, if you've missed everything, guys, today, if you just zoned out on me, I'm going to conclude with this, okay? Don't settle for just being Christian. Yep. Be salt, be light. Preserve and shine. Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth and the light of your world. That's better than being Christian. Way better, more exciting, more fun than being just Christian and checking off a box. And if you will commit to this, if you will say, I'm down, Jesus, I will be salt. I will preserve. I will be light. I will shine for you. That kind of movement is a movement that can change a landscape of a city. And I guarantee you, it will change our city. It will change our community if you will commit to it, if you will be salt and light. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for all that you do in our life. Thank you for being the example that we didn't have to just wonder, that you came and you gave us a Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, and you challenged us, not just to operate and identify with something, but to be something, to serve a bigger purpose, Lord. But then you opened it up where we could actually achieve it. Lord, we can be salt. We can preserve what's around us and preserve this earth and this world and the lives around us for something better. Help us see what those areas, help us see the areas where we need to be salty and we need to help. Lord, thank you for calling us to be light. That, Lord, even though we might feel dim or unseen, your light shines so bright in us that we cannot be hidden. Lord, that everywhere we go, your love is so powerful that it cannot be hidden. So, Lord, I pray that we embrace being salt and being light, Lord, and that we begin to change as a catalyst, a changing a movement, a form, a way for your kingdom. Father, we love you. We praise you. Bless each and every person here, Lord, and as we go, and bless Village Heights. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.